Everyone has a fave Wendy's Frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new Frosty Swirls and Frosty Fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to Frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC. Used with permission.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect lore cast. I'm In7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Spectres, welcome back to another week of the Mass Effect Lorecast. I am your host, In7 the Legend, and joining me as always is Genesis. And Genesis, it looks like you are in orbit right now.
I am in orbit in super secret redacted location. So my audio is a little bit wonky this week if this is the first time that you're tuning in. It's normally not sounding like this.
That's okay. We totally understand. And then thank you, everyone, for your patience about last week, where we had to skip last week because I was right in the thick of an interview-packed week looking for a new full-time job. But it's good. It's good news. Anyway, speaking of jobs, we have a very corporate character to talk about today.
Yes. Yes, we do. And I have a lot of thoughts on our character today. Do you want me to fully introduce it or do you want to?
Well, yeah, I think when we try and dance around it, people on Spotify already see the title and they're like, well, I already know who you're talking about. So why don't we talk about Kelly Chambers, huh?
Kelly. Okay, so Ravana and I covered her on The Girls and experience her full romance really changed the way that I think about her. You know, she's very, very different than if you've just been like the standoffish person to her the whole time. So I can't wait to really get into this.
Would help if I unmute myself. Before researching for this episode, I thought that the romance culmination scene for her was the dinner.
Oh.
And then I did a little bit of research and I quickly found out that no, I was very wrong. So apparently I have never fully romanced Kelly. I think because I just stopped trying after the dinner. I was like, okay, well, she's going to feed my fish, so I can't get better than that. But it does get better. And we'll get into a little bit of that. But did you know that her voice actor was also in Better Call Saul? She was Paige Novick, for those of you who watched the show, and my apologies if I mispronounced it, the character's name, because I don't. But apparently, she was in Better Call Saul. But I think that we're going to differ a lot on Kelly, because I didn't really dislike Kelly until I got older. I felt neutral about her most of the time that I was a teenager playing this game. And now I think after being in the workforce for a certain amount of time, I have just simply had too many experiences with people just like her to want any more experiences with people who are just like Kelly.
Oh, no, I totally get it. Because in the beginning, I thought that she was just annoying and there to be like the sexy secretary type. But, you know, I actually learned that there was more to her. And I get that. I really, really do. The type that thinks flirting is a way to get in, or the ones who will come and sit on your desk because they think it's cute. Yeah. But honestly, I was that girl for a while. It's an easy stereotype to play into. But then life happens. Things knock you down, and then you have to either stay there or grow from it and become more than someone just looking to sleep their way to trophy wife status. Kelly kind of does.
I don't know what you're talking about. Kelly is just a really empathetic soul.
Yeah. I've never experienced any form of trauma, and I'm here just to spread my love in any way possible.
Yeah.
That's Kelly, right?
Yeah, there we go. So you had to mention the ones that will come and sit on your desk thinking it's cute. Okay, so if anyone else has ever worked with someone like this, then you know all of the aura that goes around with it. You know what I mean? I once had a coworker who did this and would refer to me as her work husband, despite me asking her not to. Yeah, that was uncomfortable.
I have only referred to somebody as a work husband once because he was like my counterpart in a lot of ways, and it was mutually agreed upon. He then started calling me his work wife. It wasn't weird or creepy. I get the sense of this situation with you. It was not reciprocated.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. Anyway, that's, you know, Kelly, you kind of nailed it with that. Kelly does have this kind of vibe, maybe not so forward about it, but she's got the very, you know, I'm here to be a listening, crying shoulder for you if you need it, you know, that kind of thing. And I think a lot of people might ask, what does Kelly even do aboard the Normandy, besides tell you, you've got mail?
Well, okay. In Mass Effect 1, we had Caden and Ashley there to let us know how the other crewmates were doing. You could ask them how everyone was working together and who wanted to talk to you next. Caden had all the dirt and Ashley had all of the drama. But now that role is taken on by Kelly. But I think she can explain it better than I can.
Absolutely. So why don't we go ahead and jump over here to a clip. This one uploaded to YouTube by A.M. Harbinger. Thank you, A.M. Harbinger.
I'm Yeoman Kelly Chambers. I've been assigned as your administrative assistant. I'll manage your messages and help you monitor the crew. And I must say, it's such an honor to work under you, Commander Shepard.
I'm glad to have you on the team, Miss Chambers.
Please, call me Kelly.
Okay, Kelly.
Anything else?
Do you have a moment to talk?
I always have time for you, Commander.
What are your responsibilities?
I'll keep you notified of any messages or appointments you might have. If any of the crew has important business to discuss, I'll make sure you know.
Isn't that the type of task better suited for a VI?
Yes, but being your yeoman is just my official role. Unofficially, I observe the crew. Everyone knows how risky our mission is. Many of us may not be coming back. That's a lot of pressure. I have a degree in psychology. I'm good at sensing when people are overly taxed.
You make sure the crew's mental health is sound?
Yes. I look for warning signs. I listen. It's not a full-time job, and it's most effective when done informally.
We're lucky to have someone with your skills, Kelly.
Okay. She says, okay, I have a degree in psychology. I'd really like to know what degree that is. Because if it's an associate's, if it's, you know, a doctorate, that's a little bit different, right?
Yeah, I too would like to know what level of psychology and what her main focus was. Because, yeah, I went to school for psychology too, but that doesn't actually mean anything.
Okay, so she's our yeoman, but in the corporate world, we might call her our secretary, our executive assistant. I mean, she does call herself your administrative assistant, but her duties extend to the whole crew, not just your office, unless you want her there.
There are definitely some scenarios in which you want Kelly in your office.
Yeah, yeah, because my fish will die otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know what I would really call her. I think that she's a yeoman, and that is a real actual like terminology that the United States Navy uses. So it at least has some basis in real world.
Right. Yeah. So, she essentially, her job is to listen in to crewmates, pick up on nuanced, perhaps nonverbal cues about their mental well-being, to advise you about it, to advise you when they'd like to speak with you. She manages essentially all incoming communications meant for the commander. So yes, in that way, she is a little bit like the commanding officer's secretary. But let's talk about her ties to Cerberus, right? I mean, she works for them, but is she as gung-ho about the pro-human thing? Is she just kind of stuck in a job like the clinically depressed looks I get from some retail workers? I think the answer here lies in whether you choose to actually get to know her. Because if you don't, then you might think that she's just a corporate cheerleader. But here's what she tells us when we first ask her. When we first ask her about Cerberus, here's what she says. You ready?
This organization has a dark reputation. Do you have any concerns working for them?
Not at all. Our methods can be harsh, but Cerberus has noble objectives. We look out for human interests. Advance human technology, save human lives. They're good goals.
It sounds like Cerberus wants to dominate all aliens and put humankind on top.
Cerberus looks out for humanity, but that doesn't mean we hate aliens. My sister started a dog shelter, but she loved cats too. I love humanity. I also love Asari, Quarian, Turian, Salarian, Hanar. That isn't in conflict with Cerberus ideals.
That's a very positive attitude.
What can I say? I'm a people person.
Ugh. I'm a people person. Okay, go have like lunch with the rest of your HR department, Kelly. Oh my gosh. Ugh.
Okay, but okay, yes. I also kind of like it though, in the fact that this is the part of Cerberus that she believes in. So she's telling you, like, just because I'm pro-human doesn't mean I'm anti-alien. And so I kind of like that. I've done a Shepard run-through at playing that same style.
Okay, counterpoint. That sounds a lot like the All Lives Matter people.
Let's take it a step further.
Yes. I'm just going to suck all the air out of the room right away. If you're listening to this on your morning commute to work, you're welcome. Glad I woke you up. But she's excusing some of Cerberus's reputation and actions as harsh but justified, right? That's what she's doing. And now, at the surface level, I'm going to play devil's advocate and actually kind of argue for her now. At the surface level, we might think that is pretty extreme, that she's just downplaying Cerberus as harsh. However, it occurred to me that she likely doesn't know all of what Cerberus is doing, because she's only in the Lazarus cell, and we know that the cells are siloed and kept in the dark about each other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, nobody knows what any other Cerberus group is really doing. Only the elusive man knows everything. And Kelly is pretty, I'd say, low on the chain of command. She's not at, like, Miranda level, who's going to be in on so many of the secrets and ongoings of other things that are going on. I really don't think Kelly knows a lot.
Yeah, it kind of just seems like, you know, she comes across as naive, perhaps, that she read all of the corporate ooh-rah-rah language, believed in what they were espousing, and hasn't seen behind the curtain yet, I think is the best possible way to interpret that.
Oh, you mean the same things that Joker and Chakwas said?
What did they say?
Well, along those same lines. Like, I don't really, you know, like, Cerberus has its upsides. We're here to work with them, not against them anymore. Like, that's what Joker and Chakwas said in the beginning.
I didn't recall that specifically. For some reason, I remember them saying something along the lines of, Cerberus, yeah, I don't really care, like, screw them, but I'm here for you, Commander.
I think Joker just liked having the chair.
I was just going to say, Joker seems to really love his new ergonomic chair and his new robo girlfriend. But Kelly was handpicked, according to her, for the Normandy by none other than the Elusive Man. So that is like a very specific pipeline for scouting talent, that he would handpick her. That's a big deal. The only other person I know that he handpicked, or people, I suppose, was Miranda and Jacob.
Yeah, because he, told Brooks to find the rest of the people and to gather intel on Shepard's old crew?
That's right. She was the one compiling the dossiers and then forwarding them to Miranda, since Miranda was in charge of the Lazarus cell. But Kelly does also relay these psych reports back to the Elusive Man. So it's not just like they're internal and only meant for the commander's welfare. So in some ways, I feel like players could feel like Kelly is acting as nothing more than the Elusive Man's onboard spy. Or is that too reductive?
So she is the onboard spy, but that's not what she believes she is doing. You know, this is the Elusive Man's operation, and he's overseeing the whole crew, with Shepard and Miranda being the onboard commanders. So she relates her findings back to both Shepard and Timmy. You know, her background is, quote, in psychology, and I believe that she genuinely wants to help the crew with their mental health during what are some extremely mentally taxing times. And then she's simply reporting back to her boss. It's what she's supposed to be doing. I don't think she has a hidden agenda of being a spy for Tim.
Wouldn't she have learned in the course of her psychology degree that there are certain aspects of mental health between a counselor or a confidant and the patient or client that you do not disclose outside of that relationship?
No, because I believe that there are, like in the military, if you see a military psychiatrist, they report back to your commanding officer on some things. Right?
Sure. I mean, Cerberus isn't the military, but it's a military operation, you could say. So this is an interesting topic. I guess maybe she would report some details, maybe, if she felt that the mental status of said crew member was jeopardizing the mission or the safety of others.
Yeah, I think that's what she was doing. You know, we don't get to actually see the reports that she's sending back to the Elusive Man. It could be along the same lines of what she tells us each time somebody new joins the ship. Like, I remember specifically for when Garrus joins, she says, you know, he seems so sad, I wish I could just go give him a hug. And, you know, it's like, if that's what she's reporting back to the Elusive Man, Garrus Vakarian seems a little depressed. It's not like she's being a very good spy then.
No, however, the other possibility is that the Elusive Man placed her there and gave her this mission specifically because there are so many aliens aboard a Cerberus vessel, and he doesn't trust aliens, so.
Yeah.
So maybe he just basically needed someone who was not Shepard and was not Miranda, so that she could be on board the ship the whole time and kind of have eyes on these suspicious aliens that the Elusive Man thought about. But I don't know. I'll come back to the Cerberus thing in a bit when we talk about her in Mass Effect 3. But I find it interesting that she's basically feeling out mental health aboard the Normandy. most of her dialogue in Mass Effect 2 is basically comments about the crewmates or showering Shepard with praise and affection, if you take it there. That said, after the Horizon mission specifically, she asks about the Vermeier survivor, and I find it interesting if you romanced either Caden or Ashley. So take a listen to this dialogue right here. Let me bring it up.
I saw the reports on Horizon, Commander. What you did was amazing. The report mentioned that Ashley Williams was there. How did that go?
It was good to see her.
Do you have strong feelings for her?
What we had together is in the past now.
I'm sorry. Parting ways with someone so close is never easy.
I appreciate that, but I'll be okay.
Okay, so for me, as someone who, of course, romanced Ashley, when Kelly probed about this, my first thought was, aren't you particularly interested in my previous relationship and how that reunion went with my ex?
Yeah, I also went along the same lines of, why are you asking me about this? Because that was a really hard moment with Caden turning his back on me and walking away. So I was kind of mad at him in the moment. And now Kelly's asking about him. And I'm like, I don't want to talk to you about it. Not right now.
Yeah, I just got back on the ship. Jeez. The other thing is, even if she's not taking a personal interest, she's definitely psychoanalyzing Shepard in this moment. And Shepard is just shutting it down. Yeah, thanks. I'm okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it is nice if you actually tell her what your true feelings are for Vermeier survivor in that moment, because it's like, I still have a lot of feelings for them. She's consoling you about the fact that you guys can't be together. Or if you're like, no, forget them. She's like, okay, you might need to sit and think on this for a minute because you have a lot of emotions running through you right now.
I kind of like the whole shutting it down, like, thanks, but I'm okay, because for me, my role play is Commander Shepard doesn't trust Cerberus at all and knows that every single thing he or she says to Kelly is going right back to Cerberus. So it's like, thanks, I'm going to handle my own personal problems. We're going to keep this relationship strictly business. Anyway, you know, do I have a new email, Kelly? Oh.
I love how opposite we play this game. I totally just, it's like, yeah, I love being open and honest with people. If you ask me a question, I'm going to tell you how I feel.
Look, I love being open and honest too, but I have been bit too many times and now I'm a little jaded. So I'm like, okay, maybe I shouldn't be open and honest with as a default because these motherfuckers are scheming. But anyway. That takes us to the infamous crew abduction, and Kelly is one of those named crew members who can die if you don't choose to save them. Now, an interesting note here that I found on an old blog post, I had to put it into the Wayback Machine and resurrect it. It was written by the writer who created Kelly's character, Dusty Everman. He writes, from a development point of view, the real purpose for those light characters was to give meaning to the choice of going through the Omega 4 relay early or waiting. It was supposed to be something like the Ashley-Caden choice in Mass Effect 1. Do you save your Normandy crew but risk your squad mates and the entire mission? Or do you prepare more but potentially sacrifice the crew? So what he's saying here is that it was supposed to be something where you couldn't save everybody.
Yeah. I think there wasn't enough weight in this decision for me because I have never immediately gone to save them. I've always been more worried about the people who are my squad mates, the ones that I go out with, that I can have as party members. And I think that's just because it's like, yeah, the side characters are important. They are. They're there to move the story forward. But your squad mates are there to actually build the story.
I mean, I get it. I mean, I love Chakwas, right? But like Gabby and Ken and like Sergeant Gardner, the mess sergeant, you know, it sucks that they got abducted. But I gotta go do Tally's loyalty mission, and then and then I'll go through the relay, right? Yeah, I always, and I'm also a completionist, so I did not like the feeling like I had to leave some mission behind. Now, if they had reworked this where you literally had to choose one or the other, where you couldn't have your cake and eat it too, that if you waited even one mission, they would die, that would have been insane. I think I might have liked that, actually.
I do too. And I think that, you know, with the Cade and Ashley decision in one, it was very clear. Save Ashley, save Caden, make your one and only choice right now. To me, it wasn't that clear that, you know, going to do the Reaper IFS mission meant that a countdown was going to start, which meant that I had to do things in this order in order to save everybody. And I guess I do like that because, you know, it's, you have to face your consequences for doing things however you want to do them, not in a specific order. But I guess it could have also been made a little bit more clear that this was the decisions that I would be making.
Yeah. So Dusty Everman continues in saying, reflecting on that choice, saying that we kind of failed at this goal on two accounts. One, that decision wasn't clear. Like you just said, that decision wasn't clear. And two, we gave the ability to save everyone if you did the mission order just right. But the light crew members were there in an attempt to give you someone to care about. If you don't like the flirty, optimistic yeoman, hopefully you like your old doctor friend, or the joking engineers, or the brash cook. Hopefully there is at least one of those you care about to make the choice to go through the Omega Relay early a compelling one. It wasn't compelling for me, but it's not because I didn't care about those people, it's just that I cared more about the squadmates.
Exactly. I cared more about the squad mates. But then honestly, I was really sad when I did a playthrough where I just jumped into ME3 and did the Genesis comics to start them. And all those people were gone because the comic book makes you make the choice. Do the loyalty missions or save your crew.
That's tough. I've never actually done the Genesis comics, I think. The only time I did them was when I did the Mass Effect randomizer playthrough, because there was no randomizer mod for Mass Effect 1. Nothing in that playthrough mattered at all. I don't know. I'd love to hear from other people who willfully went through the Omega 4 relay early because you didn't want to lose the other crew members besides your squad mates, or maybe you thought the squad mates were included on that. Although, like YouTube's in chat here says, the abducted crew missed out on seeing Shep successfully stuffing a Kodiak with all of their squad mates. Yeah, there is a lot of people in there. Usually you're taking four tops and then it's 12. Woof. Okay, so obviously if you don't save Kelly, she gets turned into goo for the human Reaper the collectors are building. But if you save her just in time, then she survives with some serious PTSD. And here she is talking about it directly after the fact in Mass Effect 2. Give this a listen.
You came for us. I knew you would. Thank you. 1,000 times, thank you.
How are you doing, Kelly?
I'm holding up. I just can't get the memories out of my head. Trapped. Suffocating. It's oozing into every pore. Faint sobs echoing the confined space. But I can't dwell on it. I'm okay now. I'm alive. Back to the old Kelly.
Oof. Okay, back to the old Kelly, she says. That's really hard to hear, back to the old Kelly, because it's like this willful choice, this effort made in vain to hold the styrofoam underwater like everything's okay. And the delivery of that line is really great as well, because you can tell she's fighting with it, because she's like, okay, we've got a mission to do. Back to the old Kelly, I can't focus on this right now, and yet this is... The psychologist needs help.
Yeah. And I think that that line definitely needed to be there. There is so much trauma that all of our grizzled warrior types don't talk about. But Kelly does. Chakwas does. The non-combatants that you save are all hurting because of what happened to them. And Kelly is really the only one to talk about how she felt and how it continues to feel. This conversation doesn't stop in ME2, it continues into ME3. And honestly, I feel like she's one of the most emotionally aware people on the Normandy. As everyone else bottles it up. They ignore it. They laugh off the pain or just tell it to fuck off like Jack. But with some in their romance dialogues, you get peeks at it, little glimpses about what they are feeling. But in reality, they're there to help you. They're there to help Shepard, not for Shepard to help them with their current trauma. You do their loyalty missions to heal a part of their past, but you don't help them heal right now in the moment. And I'm sorry, did I mention that I have a lot of thoughts on Kelly?
I can tell. Yeah. You're a little bashful, but go on.
Okay. I mean, I can talk more about how the fact that I actually think that she's one of the most emotionally intelligent people on this ship, because nobody else really asks you, how are you doing, Shepard? And truly listens and uses that as feedback in order to adjust the way that she's talking to you. But, you know, because who else is going to have three different relationship statuses with you? And she does that because of the way that you interact with her. But, okay. Anyways, I can move on. Now, if you save her and have dinner with her as either a friend or as a lover, she comes back in Mass Effect 3.
See, I didn't know that the dinner was necessary for her to come back. And that would probably explain why I don't find her sometimes at that refugee camp on the Citadel.
Yeah, you have to either be friendly or flirtatious with her in order to get that dinner. And a lot of people who just don't like her persona out the gate just completely ignore her and never even get her to like friendship status.
Yeah, I might be guilty of that one. I mean, the other thing was, you have to understand that I was operating under the assumption that the dinner was the romance scene, and thereby, if you do the dinner, you are romancing her. And so a lot of playthroughs, I just wanted to be faithful to Ashley, so I romanced Ashley in Mass Effect 1, purposefully didn't romance anyone in Mass Effect 2, and then rekindled it with Ash in Mass Effect 3. So I always kind of headcanoned that, like, the dinner was, like, something physical happened. I don't know what base they got to, but, like, come on. I don't know. I read a comment from the writer on the blog that says, look, that one was purposefully left open to interpretation. If you imagined it as just a friendly dinner, then it was a friendly dinner. If you imagined it as something physical, then it was something physical. So, I don't know. The fact that they apparently stayed up all night in the captain's private quarters. Do you think they were playing chess?
I mean, so it depends on which playthrough I'm going through right now and if I'm fully romancing or just like flirting with her. But yeah, I definitely think two friends can sit up talking all night long playing video games and chatting and not have it be anything more than that.
Okay, but that's not... Okay, he met her, like, what, 2 months before that? And it's not like they have a lot of friendly banter. It's just, like, a lot of, like, praise and, oh, there, from Kelly. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. It was oddly flirtatious leading up to the dinner. I am hard-pressed to believe that it was strictly steak. I think something else was on the menu. But regardless, even if you keep her as a friend and you have dinner, you've run into her again in Mass Effect 3. Here's a little bit of what that reunion looks like.
I've been so worried. Without my Cerberus contacts, I had no way of knowing if you'd survive the invasion.
You're not with Cerberus anymore?
Working with you opened my eyes, got me thinking. I looked closely at what Cerberus had done. In good conscience, I couldn't stay with them. You inspired me to leave.
It looks like there were a lot of people here who could use your help.
There is. I feel I'm making a real difference. If there was ever a reason I studied psychology, it was to help people at a time like this.
Didn't think Cerberus liked people going AWOL.
They don't. But Cerberus has more important things to worry about than me.
Don't take chances with Cerberus. Change your look. Change your name. Get new identification.
That takes time, and the people here need my help.
Do it, Kelly.
Okay, I will. If you think I should.
Okay, so she says that she's going to change her identity, but more importantly, she does leave Cerberus. And if you, like me, thought that the dinner meant a romance thing and just were like, oh, I don't really want to do that, I'll just keep you as a friend, so don't do the dinner, then you never find her in Mass Effect 3. This might be why. And you would also never get to see, if you don't see her in Mass Effect 3, you never get to see that she leaves Cerberus. And this is yet another character's redemption arc shaped by Shepard.
Yeah, so I think it's the fact that she leaves Cerberus. She was obviously paying attention to everything else that was going on. She was learning that there was more to Cerberus than the parts she originally saw, the parts that she signed up for. And the fact that she couldn't go on. She could not be on the Normandy anymore. I am not going to get emotional on this one. I did the first time and I'm not doing it again. She has some trauma still that she's working through. And I understand her choices.
Absolutely. Especially the desire for her to just stay there and help those people in the refugee camp is truly altruistic. So I take issue with the fact that it is a renegade choice to tell her to protect herself, to change her identification, because that's crucial. When Cerberus invades the Citadel, they go looking for her and they will kill her if she does not go incognito. This is something that I learned about while researching for this week. I always go Paragon, so I think like the one or two times she was alive in Mass Effect 3 for me, I always just tell her to take care of the refugees instead because I think that that's Paragon. I'm like, yeah, that's altruistic. Just take care of the refugees. You know, maybe that'll have some impact later where some of the refugees will become more assets. I don't know. And then after the coup, if you told her to change her name and appearance, you can find her again in that camp. And she will tell you how the Cerberus troopers raided. They lined up people and they asked for her by name. They were ready to shoot, but they didn't recognize her.
Yeah, and that's when you can actually continue the romance or continue on with the friendship, and she'll give you your fish back and all of those things. You know, it's just, it's very interesting that it does, it's a renegade choice to do that, but I guess renegade is a little bit more self-perseverance. No, that's the wrong word. But yes, preservation. Thank you. But I think Kelly needs to hear from Shepard that it's okay for her to think about herself, because she spent her entire time on the Normandy thinking about the mental health of everyone else. And she needs somebody to tell her it's okay to work on herself.
Wow, check that out. The psychologist needs help. That's not a cliche at all. Anyway, I found this interesting bit of cut content that puts Kelly's character in an entirely different light for me. Did you ever wonder how it was that Kelly and the Elusive Man met? Or why it seemed that she was so fond of him, at least at the beginning in Mass Effect 2? So check this out. This was either supposed to be dialogue or an email that you get from her in Mass Effect 3. She says,
"Well, I've been questioning myself."
I don't know if I want to read the whole thing like that.
"I owe Cerberus a great deal. Was it right for me to leave them? It's a long story. Did you know I actually met the Elusive Man face to face once? Few have.
Okay.
Before Cerberus, I was a waitress on a luxury liner with a very exclusive clientele. I'm not sure if the elusive man was there for business or pleasure. I just kept his drinks coming. Bourbon. Three fingers. Neat. He had his pick of any working girl, but he took an interest in me. I suspect precisely because I wasn't for sale. We spoke for hours. It was obvious he wanted more than just good conversation, and I can't say I didn't want the same. He can be very seductive. I knew if I slept with him, I'd lose all his respect. I didn't want that to happen. I never saw him again after that night, at least not in person. The management of the liner changed sometime later. Batarians took over. Things got really bad. Some of the staff were beaten, others just disappeared. None of us could leave. I don't know exactly why, but one day Cerberus boarded and cleaned the ship out, killed every Batarian. But they took care of the entertainers, made sure we were all safe, set us up with lodging until we got on our feet. I got a message from the elusive man. He'd pay for my college, and if I did well, I'd have a job waiting for me. So you see, I owe him my life, in more ways than one. Long story short, the elusive man got me out of a bad situation, gave me an education and a job. He gave me a future.
Well done.
That's a horrible, horrible Kelly impression. And congrats to everyone who stuck it out and listened to that whole thing.
Okay. Thoughts and feels on this letter itself. I wish it was actually in-game canon, not deleted, because this would have brought a lot more.
Yeah, I don't know why this was cut. It could have been an email. You know what I mean? This could have been an email, Kelly.
It could have. It could have for sure. But maybe that would just make us... Well, but if we're supposed to want to trust the elusive man in the beginning, you know, that... Oh, it's three. Okay.
That's the part that I find interesting. You'd think that maybe this would be pillow talk if you romanced her, you know?
Yeah, it could have been.
And I know it's cut content, but I am just going to headcanon that it is canon. Because if it was intended to be in the game and then it was cut, maybe for budgetary reasons, maybe they couldn't secure the budget to get more lines out of that voice actor. I don't know. Clearly it was written with the intention of including it at some point, and there's no supplementary explanation that kind of like goes in this void. But it makes sense why the elusive man handpicked her then.
Yeah, because she wouldn't put out, which that makes me very happy. Go, Kelly. Stick by your morals on that one. Also, another trope of, oh my gosh, she won't give me what she wants. I must be falling in love with her. Yeah, there's another trope to play into.
That's also quite the cyberpunk type story, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to uplift you, pay for your college, pay for your education, pay for everything.
Right.
Because, wow, some woman actually had the audacity to say no to me? You are intriguing. I'm going to follow the rest of your life and pay for everything, because then maybe you'll say yes to me.
Yeah, no such thing as a free lunch. Yeah, that kind of person freaks me out. Anyway, we have to go to mid break, but when we get back, Jin, I think you've got the steamy details about romancing Kelly. All right, here we go. We're going over to mid break.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down? And you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all, and everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, This isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer. The foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepard.
Grunt?
Shepard.
Rex? Grunt?
All right, and here we are in the middle of the show, and we have a new review from Penitent Tangent on Apple, who leaves 5 stars and says, "My favorite lore cast on the Citadel. Finally managed to binge my way to the most recent episode, and I gotta say, this is the perfect podcast to deep dive the Mass Effect lore with. Has me thinking it's time to replay the original trilogy again, with an emphasis on paying a little closer attention to some of the details of what's going on that I may not have noticed before." Well, Penitent, thank you so much for that kind review. I think that that is exactly our goal with this lorecast, is not to replace the games, but to just kind of add some supplementary details that make playthroughs a little bit more fun. So thank you for listening. And we have a planet card, I think. Do we, Genesis?
We do. I couldn't think of a planet card that fit for Kelly, so I went with Katie, a planet that starts with the letter K, and it sounds like Katie, Kelly, along the same lines. And the planet is spelled K-A-D-D-I. It is out in the Perseus Vale in the Tacoon system. Katie has low gravity for a planet of its size, which proved a significant boon to early Quarian explorers. Even before the discovery of Mass Effect technology, it was easy to extract Katie's resources. When the Quarians first made contact with the Citadel species and gained access to Izo, profits rose and the orbital stations became a beehive of activity. Today, Katie's Lagrange points are littered with space junk, including pieces of Geth orbital station that must have massed at least 500 million tons. Such a station could have generated impressive kinetic barriers, but these appear to have been insufficient against the Quarians' attacks.
All right, give it up for Katie! All right, thank you, Genesis. So that was the planet Katie. And some more news. We are Twitch affiliates, everybody. So cue the canned laughter, which I don't have on my soundboard anymore. I need to do it. Anyway, let's hear from Aria.
Don't fuck with Aria.
There we go. Thank you, Aria. So that means that we are assuming direct control of your mind, and you will come hang out with us on Twitch. We also have some new patrons to thank. Hannah L. and Tim B., our Tier 5 patrons, do get a shout-out every week. Thank you to Ed Boy, Kira C., Lieutenant Tosino, Redrobot, Superfly 440, Unfortunate Benefactor, and William. All right, and with that, let's get back to the rest of the show.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Solarian reproduction different. Very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
All right, Genesis. Clue us in on this Kelly romance.
So, N7, you have said that we save the plugging for the end. But...
I have said that, yeah, on this show.
But I'll just let you all know that if you want more details about the Kelly romance and analysis of her character through the lens of the romance specifically, check out episodes 25 and 78 of the Two Girls, One Ship podcast. 25, we did Mass Effect 2. 78, we were in Mass Effect 3. We are on episode 180. So you gotta scroll back pretty far.
Oh my gosh, 180? I can't believe it's been that long. Okay, so for those of us who have not listened to those episodes, what is the deal with romancing Kelly versus not romancing Kelly?
Yeah. So like I said, that there are three levels to status with Kelly. There's professional, friendly, and flirty. Professional is you have been shutting down all of her advances and you told her to stay professional only. You will not get her fish food or her dinner date, and she won't show up in Mass Effect 3. Now, friendly is talking with her as a friend, politely saying no, but being open with her and actually talking to her, not ignoring her just to go run to whoever you wanted to talk to. And flirty, where you not only get the dinner, but two extra interactions afterwards. Now, to unlock these romance scenes, you must talk to Kelly immediately after she returns from the collector base. And you ask her how she was doing. And that's when you get her first PTSD moment, like we talked about. The other one happens in Mass Effect 3. And after she tells you what it was like being on the base, you can use the intercom in your cabin to call her up.
Okay, that's literally a booty call?
Yes. Yes, it is. And I did not give this romance a high rating because I did not like the way that it plays out at all. Because it does. It feels like a literal booty call.
Why not just pick up a bell that you have on your desk and ring it? Oh, Kelly!
Yeah. Buzz, buzz. Kelly to my chambers. Kelly Chambers to my chambers, please.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
If Mass Effect were a sitcom, that would totally be Shepard announcing that over the PA.
And I mean, it does feel also a little bit weird when in Mass Effect 3, when you have to call Trainer to call your lover up to your room. I don't like that either.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. Anyway, dance for me.
Yeah, that's what you ask. You ask Kelly to come up to your room and then you tell her to dance for you. Okay, now, yes. Do I like seeing the woman that I've been flirting with in the Cora's Den stripper outfit? Yes. Do I like the fact that this is the dance they pulled from Mass Effect 2 and put into Mass Effect 3 as the wall dancer in Purgatory?
Yes.
Is there a video of me doing the wall dance karaoke? Probably. Is it headcanon-worthy fantasy playing out that you will be able to touch this stripper when the song is over? Also, probably yes. But what I don't understand about this romance is that it is also the same body language from Shepard that we had from those strippers at Cora's Den.
Lean forward. Tip. Yep.
It is. It is elbows on knees, leaning forward, or hands on thighs, leaning back. I was expecting my Omni tool to pop up so I could tip her. Okay, so I dug into this scene more, and I read more about it.
And tell me, does she want more than the tip?
I think she wants the whole damn thing.
But we didn't get the whole damn thing because these scenes were added after all the voice acting was done. So there is nothing romantic or sexy that they are saying to each other. It's just the music thumping in the background and you're watching her do the wall dance. Is it hypnotic and I've watched it on a 5-minute loop before? Yeah, sue me. But you know what? That's what it's there for. It's eye candy, but it's not an actual romance. I wish that the scene didn't end because you pick the option to stop. But I would have been happy if we saw her walking towards Shepard after like 15 seconds to show that this was her version of foreplay. And it means that this dance was more than just transactional.
Yeah. So, okay. So there is a little bit of, there's a little bit of a fourth wall breaking explanation there. And it came from her creator and narrative designer, Dusty Everman. I'm sure you read that as well, that this particular sequence in her romance was actually produced after the voice acting was all done. So they couldn't do, they couldn't give it any voice acting. And in fact, this scene almost never happened. So the fact that we even got it, they said, was because some very passionate cinematic designers stayed after hours to make it happen. And like, they literally worked for free to do that.
The after hours for the after hours scenes. Yeah. And I do appreciate the fact that they put all of them in there, because the second type interaction is the same that you get with any of your other romances, where you can sit holding each other on the couch. You can lay fully clothed on top of the bed. You know, those are the interactions that you get in Mass Effect 2 after the Omega 4 relay missions. If you continue to play the game, you can call any of your romance options up to the cabin and have these interactions. Kelly just gets the added feature of the dance.
So imagine, if you will, there is a man who now in his 30s, but was a teenager when he first started playing this game series, and only learned recently while he was doing a podcast about this very series that Kelly ever wears a stripper outfit, let alone that that is the romance culmination scene, whereas he previously thought it was the dinner. I was very shocked to see those YouTube videos. I was like, wow, I think 16-year-old me really missed out. But anyway.
Oh, that's where the wall dance came from, and I'm happy for it. But we can quickly go through what happens in her Mass Effect 3 romance, because this is where I fully realized her level of maturity. Like we said earlier, Shepard finds her in the cargo bay with the refugees. And if you ask her to come back with you, most of the clips that you find online are all about, like, how are you doing, Kelly? You should stay here. What's going on? And she tells you all of the nightmares she has been going through in details, in full vivid pictures about why she can never step back onto the Normandy. It is a full minute of dialogue between her and Shepard, and the way that she describes the horror she relives through, the first time I heard it, I cried. So I know that we can't play it now, but if you want to know more, please go find it. A lot of her romance videos are the ones that will actually show it. Yeah. So she has the maturity that some of our other romance options haven't displayed. If you are romancing someone else in Mass Effect 3, she holds no grudge. She has no ill will. She encourages you to find new love because she knows that she cannot follow you on the path that you are on right now, because she cannot get back on the ship. Now, you can, of course, continue the relationship with her, and that will lead to another, in my opinion, disappointing romance scene. The fact that she is one of the most overtly, like, flirtatious out there people, and then you get the disappointing no action love scenes is just, oh, I feel so off about it. Because you go into the storage container that she has both been living and working out of and have an open door quickie. I'm sorry, but no. At least let me close the door, or better yet, let me go anywhere else but in the middle of a freaking refugee camp.
What is this, a barn? Come on.
I don't know. And I don't like it, because I would romance Kelly. I would. Because of the conversations that we've had. Look, I don't fully understand of those of you who choose Kelly as your main romance option, but I get it. I see the potential that it had and the headcanons that you can add to make this a full romance.
She certainly has one of the more fleshed out character stories of any of the minor Normandy crew members, I think, which is so unbelievable, because can you believe Kelly as a character was almost cut from the games entirely? like entirely. Here's a little bit more from that narrative designer, Dusty Everman, who says, Mass Effect 2 was a very large-scale project. Every department was heavily tasked to get a polished product out the door. And due to its nature, the Normandy came in a bit later than other levels. When it came time to flesh out the Normandy's light characters and plots, the writers and cinematic designers were fully tasked. There were discussions where Kelly, at least the part beyond you have email or such and such wants to speak with you, Dr. Chakwas, Engineer Donnelly and Daniels, and Mess Sergeant Gardner were all on the chopping block. And there were other characters that did get cut. In the end, a level designer did the writing for those characters, not a writer. And most of the cinematic design work for those characters was done after hours by passionate cine designers. They were pretty much created after work hours as a labor of love by all involved.
And that's why I can't complain about it too much, because I would rather have what we have than rather not have any of it at all. But I'm also greedy 10 years later to where I just want more because I want more.
It's frankly amazing, like, all of the things the team was able to, like, pull out and just, like, MacGyver into Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3, both of them, on such a tight schedule. And you look back at stories like Kelly's and you're like, whoa, hold on a second. You're telling me that her writer was done by a level designer and that all of the cinematic work was done after hours for her? That is insane. That this was like a passion project that technically they didn't get paid for. Anyway, that's crazy to me. And it's also crazy to me that Kelly's character was just almost cut entirely, you know, along with Chakwas, Donnelly, Daniels, and Gardner.
Yeah, that's a lot of people that I feel like Normandy would have been more empty if they were all gone.
Yeah, it would have felt empty. It would have felt very empty. In fact, I feel like it really added to the world building, having them there, that without them, I'm not sure that I would have felt immersed in Mass Effect, like, hardly at all.
Yeah, because what, then it's only squad mates that you go talking to?
Plus Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this has been a heck of an episode on Kelly. I think that's all we got for her. If you like this episode, you should go and have a romance playthrough with Kelly. Go use a save editor and save yourself a little time if you can on PC. But that's all we got for this week. Next week, we are having our patron chat, where I can't wait to speak to our patrons. I don't know what they're going to choose to talk about. It's going to be the end of July, if you can believe it. We're almost in August. So, until then, Genesis, what do you got going on? How can people get a hold of you?
Oh, I've plugged the girls enough tonight, so I will just say come and join me on the Cyberpunk Lorecast as well.
All right. Well, I don't have anything to plug. I am streaming when I can. I am managing as best as I can with a 4-month-old child now. But if people want to get a hold of me, you can add me on Steam, Xbox, any social media that I have. All of it's going to be at In7 The Legend. And if you do add me, just let me know, you know, hey, you know, I listen to the podcast. That way I know that you're not just a bot. Anyway, I will see you all next week, Spectres. And until then, be compassionate, people. And empathetic, because you never know what people are truly going through, like Kelly. And I possibly misjudged her. Anyway, take care, Spectres. We should go. Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new frosty swirls and frosty fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo brownie fusion, Pop-Tarts strawberry fusion, strawberry swirl, brownie batter swirl, caramel swirl, and caramel crunch fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co. LLC. Used with permission.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.